I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Loose Units, The Shadow Files. Now, for the past couple of weeks, folks, we have been talking about Dennis Rader, the BTK killer. And Dad and I have been walking through, in painstaking detail, each of his victims in order. Now, we were about to approach another of the BTK killer's very strange gaps, where he feels, presumably, like he's, you know, he's had his fill, he's got enough trophies to coast through for a while and sort of hide from the public eye. But Dad, before we jump forward in time, I just want to point out that the last victim we talked about was back in the 70s. Yeah, we were talking back in the 70s. The Wichita Police Department was really struggling to find him. Mm. People were being warned to lock their houses.
Yep.
People were even being warned, specifically women, to check their phones to make sure there was a dial tone when they got back home to make sure he hadn't cut the phone lines. Now, in 1978... his wife, Paula, gave birth to their second child, Kerry. Yeah? Mm. Now, the reason that's important to me is that Paula was actually pregnant during Nancy Fox's stalking and murder, which is extremely upsetting. But before we jump forward to the next series of killings, something else happened in April 1979. He actually broke into somebody's house, a 63-year-old widow. He broke in, waited for her to come home, and then she never returned home, so he stole some stuff, and then he left. So that's an almost murder that happened?
It is, Paul, but also we need to, in relation to that particular story you just mentioned.
Sure.
He actually wrote some poetry and sent it to the woman that never came home that night.
Oh,
God. And explained to her in rather cryptic prose that she was very fortunate.
Mm.
Imagine getting that letter, knowing that you could well have been the next victim.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the cutting of the telephone lines.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most sort of surreal aspects of this particular story is that people were being encouraged to have home burglar alarms installed. And guess who was installing the alarms?
No.
Mr. Rader.
No.
Yes. That's the company, ADT. He worked for them. That was his job, to install security alarms in people's houses that had a real fear of being attacked by the BTK killer, Dennis Rader. It's fascinating looking at this case, Paul. I've travelled and traversed the gamut of emotions.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm finding now I'm really, really getting hooked into this big time. It's so involved. I'm actually really enjoying the research now. And this case of Maureen Hedge, it's just, we mentioned last week, we said that this week's episode was going to be worse than last week's. And it seems to be. I mean, there's been a break of 8 years, hasn't there?
Okay, so Nancy Fox was killed in 1977.
Mm.
Yeah. The burglary and the poetry of Anna Williams, the 63-year-old we talked about just before, that's 1979. So we jump forward into the 80s. Dad, a bunch of stuff happened throughout this period between the murders, which was, look, it's not as eventful as the other stuff, obviously. But for me, it's upsetting because it indicates that nobody knew that Dennis Rader was the BTK killer And in fact, this is the period during which he joined the Scouts, right?
Yes.
He became a leader, at the, a Cub Scout leader. I mean, I was in the Scouts briefly. The Scouts was a weird sort of cultural phenomenon. I don't think Scouts are... I know they're still a thing, but I don't think they have quite the cultural sort of mainstream element they did back then. But, you know, he was a leader in his church. He was working as a Cub Scout. His son, Brian, joined the Cub Scouts, in fact, during this period.
I mean, the Cubs / Scouting connection is very important. Now, the question we must all ask ourselves is, why the gap? Now, we know that he was heavily into trophies, and he was also he was a family man. Gives me the creeps to say that, but undoubtedly he was, and he was the master of keeping his fetishes to himself. I was also doing some research that his sort of mind, he wasn't your classic serial killer in that he had not had a traumatic childhood. For all the information I can glean, it was very, very normal. There were no dramas, but he developed a passion for... Firstly, he would get magazines and he'd cut out sort of the images of women. And he would have a pocket compendium, sort of like a little teledex that he could put in his pocket. But what he did is that he would draw nooses. He'd add the nooses with a pen to the cutout figures.
Right.
They'd be in this portable sort of compendium that he would carry with him all the time as a young boy. And then he developed a fascination. He initially was just thinking. Now, everything that I'm saying, listeners, is from the court transcripts. So Paul and I are not just pulling sort of stuff out of thin air. This is all, whenever we talk about what a particular victim said whilst she or he were being killed, these have come from Radar's own confession.
Okay.
Which is important to know. So when I talk about his sort of traveling into that terrible world of torturing animals, he ultimately ended up hanging cats and dogs.
Oh, God.
Because he wanted to see what they experienced. And then years later, that manifested itself with, as we mentioned last week, with the Otero family taking young girl downstairs. So, Paul, this particular, the gap of 8 years, he was at a jamboree. Is it a jamboree or jamboroo?
You're talking in regards to the Scouts?
Yeah, the Scouts, sort of a weekend camping event.
Oh, yeah, I've actually been on one. It was most unpleasant, but yes, I have a vague idea.
All right, so that's what he's doing. He's wearing his uniform, his scouting uniform. And to be an adult in amongst, you know, you're obviously a figurehead. The young boys would have looked up to their Cub and Scout leaders. Okay, so he then says to the people with him on this particular camp, he says, and it's getting on a little bit, it's sort of late afternoon, early evening, he says that he's got a headache. He then excuses himself, he hops in his motor vehicle, he drives to a bowling alley, goes inside, he goes to the bar. He has a few mouthfuls of beer. He then purposely spills beer on his clothing. Now, it's just one thing I must mention at this point is that he actually did change his clothing. So he hasn't gone into the bowling alley dressed as a sort of an oversized Cub or Scout. That possibly would have been a bit bizarre. And it certainly would have drawn attention because he's the master of being able to just move through with no one really sort of knowing that he's even there.
Mm-hmm.
What he does, he creates the illusion that he's intoxicated. He goes outside, he hails a cab.
Oh, I see.
The
yep.
cab, the driver, this is sort of the impression that Radar's trying to create with the driver is that he's intoxicated and he needs a lift home. So as the car is approaching Radar's home, this is really, really interesting, he says to the driver, I'd like to get out here. I just feel as though I need a bit of air between here and my home. So he gets out.
Mm-hmm.
The cab driver is none the wiser. Radar would have had a kit with him, the infamous kit, mm-hmm. Which he has all sorts of things inside
it. Yeah.
He then walks past his house. He then goes through the yard of his mm-hmm. in-laws. That's his mother, his wife's parents.
Yep.
He then comes to a house. And it's a house that is occupied by a woman called Maureen Hedge. Get ready for this, listeners. It's only 6 doors from where BTK Killer lives.
Oh,
and he's about to break in his own mind and probably the minds of all serial killers.
Mm-hmm.
You don't ever shit in your own backyard.
Yeah, you don't shit where you eat. It's a basic...
Ever.
It's a very basic rule.
You're going to go on a killing spree? Get mm-hmm. out of your suburb. And that is why this particular project was regarded as one of the most challenging, complex and difficult of which Radar said because he was going to operate only 6 doors. But that 6 doors away also is interesting because it means, as we discussed last week, about how much we all take in subliminally of what is actually happening in our very, very own neighbourhoods.
Mm, okay.
You and Tegan guaranteed would know lots of faces, even though you've never ever... I mean, you go to the markets, you interact, you see, you get a sense of what's happening in your area. And
absolutely.
I guess, Paul, that's a really interesting point because it would make him also feel, whilst the adrenaline would be coursing through his veins, he would also feel very safe in the knowledge that he has intimate understanding of his environment. Now, this particular woman, Maureen, a couple of things about her.
Maureen?
Maureen. Or Maureen. It's not Marina?
I think it's Marina. Hang on a sec. No, it's Maureen. Yeah. Is that a surname? Is that a surname?
No, what's Christian name. Hedge is the surname.
Maureen Hedge.
Maureen Hedge. So she worked at the Wesleyan Hospital.
Okay.
And she worked in the coffee shop. And the hours that she worked were 2 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
till midnight. Now, Dennis Radar, he knew this woman. She was regarded by the neighbours in the street as fastidious in terms of the way she kept her lawn, her mm-hmm. gardening, and he would regularly walk past and say hi. He knew her first name.
That's incredible, yeah.
And she knew him. But what is a little bit sort of creepy was that occasionally he would also go to the coffee shop at the hospital where she worked because that's part of his MO. We know that in the past, with some of his other victims, he would go to their place of work. The reason he did this was so he felt as though he really had a connection. And having a connection, it sort of makes his whole fantasy and sexual arousal all the greater because he actually knows them. They kind of know him.
Do you think there's also a degree of... It seems like there's a rush doing something as dangerous as, you know, doing it close to his home. Do you think that's sort of a unfulfilled fantasy to do something that... You know, it feels like he's sort of dancing very close to the edge.
Agreed.
He's got to know it's risky, but also for somebody who kind of gets off on hurting people and on the chase,
yep.
It seems like a bit of a... I don't know.
Agree. And it's not the intercourse. Remember, it's never intercourse. It's always gratification.
Mm.
So I just want to talk a little bit about Marine.
Okay.
And I've done my calculations for the listeners that might not be old enough to remember going from imperial to decimal in terms of weight and height. She was 5'2", which is 157 centimetres, which is petite.
Mm.
And Paul,
yeah,
she weighed 45 kilos.
Holy shit. She's
really, okay. Really. Mm. She was 53 at the time.
Yeah, okay.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So she's at home. Well, she was supposed to be at home, and he goes to her place and he realizes that as part of the plan that she would be at work, but she would be coming home. He's got the perfect alibi from where he's supposed to be at the scout movement. His wife would have no idea. As far as she's concerned, he's still away on this weekend. He goes around to the back of the house. He cuts the phone line. He then breaks into her house and he lies in wait. And then all of a sudden, he becomes aware that the car is coming into the driveway.
Mm-hmm.
And to his horror, he hears two voices. He hears the voice of Marine, and he also hears the voice of a male person.
Right.
Now, we will all remember that encounter he had when he was murdering the sister, and he had the brother, he got the brother to tie the sister up.
Yeah.
And he shot the brother twice in the face.
Yeah, I remember.
He learnt a lot from that, and he realised in that sort of awakening moment that he did not want any further dramas with a male person. He hides in a wardrobe, and he's just in this dark wardrobe.
Yeah.
And after about an hour, the gentleman leaves. He then stays in the wardrobe until approximately 1 a.m. He then comes out of the wardrobe. He walks down towards her bedroom. He would have already cased the joint because he had a fair bit of time.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows what time she comes home. He then flicks a light on, but not her bedroom light.
Mm.
He uses a light switch in an adjoining room, which illuminates her room just enough so he can see what he's about to do.
Right.
He enters the room, straddles her. She wakes up. Well, one can only imagine the horror. And very, very quickly, he strangles her with her pantyhose. He then wraps her up in the bedding. He then goes through her jewelry, her underwear, her cupboards, and he takes, and also he takes a purse with her driving license. He takes a ring that turns out to be her mother's ring. And he then goes out to her car, because remember, his car is back at the bowling alley. He's caught a cab.
Yeah.
Ostensibly to go home, walked past his house, through the in-law's backyard, round the back. He's committed this crime. What's he going to do with her body? For some reason, unlike in previous murders, he decides to take the body. And because you and I know what is coming, it's so messed up.
Yeah.
Listeners, there's a reason. This is when this just absolutely blows my mind. This guy's working on a different level that's just so fucking messed up. What he does, he drags her body, which is wrapped up in her bedding, puts it in the back of her car. He then drives her, because he's also, not only is he a scout leader, but what else is he, Paul? In terms of the church, he's a member of the church council, the Lutheran church.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So what he does, he drives her, her car to the Lutheran church. Mm-hmm. He then pulls her body out of the back of the car, hides her we know it's after 1 a.m. and it's before the sun comes up. Just remember that those facts, particularly about the sun, because that will, without using a sort of a slip of, I wouldn't say it's a Freudian slip, but it will shed light on this particular story.
Yeah.
The reason he leaves the body amongst a clump of trees, he conceals the body there, is that he then goes into the church. He's got a key. He goes to a particular location in the church. He then has all this black plastic that's folded up and tacks. Now, listeners, he had already decided that something terrible, because when he was interviewed, he said that Maureen was either going to come to the church alive or dead. But he'd been to the church days or weeks before and hidden the black plastic and the tacks. What do you think the plastic's for, Paul?
Well, blood, presumably.
No, it's to black out all the windows in the church.
Oh, Jesus, sorry.
With the tacks, he then seals every single window in the church that would emanate light. He then goes back out. Talk about premeditation, listeners. Yeah. This is next level. He then drags her. I think it could maybe have something to do with the fact that maybe he chose her because she was so slight. This is all part of the... He knew, I don't know how long before, but must have been a lot of preparation, but he knew that he needed to be able to at least manhandle a dead body. He then takes her downstairs. All the lights are on. He's got his kit. He's also got some extra things that the police have not been able to establish where these particular items came from.
Right.
But he had high-heeled shoes, like stilettos. He had that, the curtain cord. He had a Polaroid camera. And he has a mask. And then what he does is he starts to photograph her. And some of the photographs are very graphic. so graphic, in fact, that during the court case that we will get to in the next God knows how many episodes, people were actually, the judge actually says to the people in the court, for those of you that don't want to see these photographs, please all lower your heads. I mean, I've never heard that said in court, but that's
Am I to assume that you've also seen the photographs?
I have not seen the unedited, uncensored photographs, and I don't want to. Yep. I have no desire. I've seen enough crime scene photos. I've taken enough crime scene photos.
Mm.
We all have our imaginations, and I think that's all we need. We don't need
On that point, were they? Do you know if they were in colour or black and white?
Because all in colour.
Now, that's interesting because this was this is in the 80s. Mm. And you mentioned that in Australian cases, they had black and white so as not to make... Can you explain again, just for listeners, what the rationale behind that?
Mm. We were not allowed to take crime scene photographs back in the 80s in Sydney using colour film because the legal profession, the judiciary, felt that we could use filters to accentuate and highlight bruising and bloodied areas. Make the photographs far more graphic than they actually were. So it was all done in black and white. But I'll tell you now that if you have a look at a black and white photograph of a head stoved in, then you have a look at a colour photo, they're chalk and cheese.
So that law was basically an early attempt to avoid the equivalent of photoshopping, basically,
yes,
right?
Exactly. I mean,
if you make the blood redder or a bruise, or you can do... Okay.
Yep, 100%.
Right.
So he's taking coloured photographs. So he's basically got her. She's deceased. He is probably masturbating furiously on more than one occasion, depositing his semen fucking all over the shop. It's all happening in a church. So I think the church thing, he's not a priest, but he's on the council. He must have some degree of religiosity, albeit warped and twisted, but that I feel could have also assisted in his desire to climax in an extraordinary way. The fact that there's always that thing, it's my local area, I know the lady, I've murdered her, I've dragged to my church, she's in the basement, I'm now photographing her in all sorts of poses with different clothing, I'm absolutely going sort of to hell on my fantasy trip. It's staggering and terrible. But another part to this story is that because we have the benefit of knowing when he was ultimately arrested many years later, he had a trove of photographs. And of course, he had to use an Instamatic. He couldn't just take his roll to the local...
I hadn't even thought about that because, yes, back in the day, and again, I know we are aging ourselves up and obviously there was a point in the not-so-recent past where in order to get photographs made, you had to take them to a chemist or one of those little stalls at the mall. You know, you go and get your photos developed or you go to a supermarket or whatever, department store. And that wasn't that long ago, but there was a point back in the 90s, maybe even the early 2000s, thousands possibly where you would buy you'd get disposable cameras, you'd take your shots and then you'd dump those in and you'd go back, you know, usually the same day, and some person will have physically interfaced with the photos that you made, popped them in a machine or whatever, and you'd get them in an envelope and you'd have a big wad of kind of photographs. Now there's no way that a murderer would hand a roll of film
good point. However, historically, a more than a handful of pedophiles have been caught by a very alert employee of a photo lab.
Yeah.
Because they're processing thousands of photographs. They're not going to study the subject matter.
Yeah.
And most of them have got people in them. So if you were to see kids, you might, on the balance of probabilities, processing, you're just at work and you'd glaze over it. But occasionally, pedophiles would be undone. But the Instamatic camera, I've used an Instamatic back in the 70s, and they were fascinating. Bit clunky, but you would actually, you'd pull the thing out and sort of tear some covering off, and within, you could actually sit there and watch the image develop. You could see it. It was sort of quite surreal. Yeah.
But with a Polaroid, you are giving the entire process over to, you know, you're giving the entire process over to the person who's got the camera. So correct. Dennis can take photos in the comfort of his own home or church.
Yes.
And keep those. Now, those photos, do Polaroids degrade over time?
They do fade.
Yeah.
But they definitely, you can still see and make out the images.
Actually, what am I saying? So Tegan, for my 40th, got me, amongst other things, a vintage 1980s Polaroid camera that had been refurbished. So I'm using a camera right now that is very similar to the one he used in terms of the tech.
Yes.
It is, for those of you who haven't used a Polaroid, it's very basic. You just point and shoot. Mm. You put in essentially a cartridge, right?
Yep.
And I think each one is maybe 10, 12 shots. I'm not sure. I haven't used one since last year. I was in Los Angeles taking photos, and at no point did it occur to me that a Polaroid camera could be used by a serial killer to essentially hoard trophies from a murder.
Well, it makes perfect sense. And you also get to basically decide during that process as to whether or not that photograph is acceptable in your mind to give you the information you require to down the track satisfy your desires. So if you didn't like the particular pose, bearing in mind that an Instamatic camera has got unlimited, it's sort of infinite in terms of focus. So everything from very close to very far away and in the midpoint is all in focus. You don't focus an Instamatic camera. It's just you take the shot and it's all good. He didn't have any problems, and excuse my sort of momentary lapse into a bit of lightheartedness, but I think it's important. And that is that he never, ever had to say to any of his victims, would you please not move?
Well, yeah, he's photographing dead people.
He's photographing dead people.
Just a small thing I wanted to say is that, and this is something I wanted to bring up a couple of episodes ago, actually. If you are hoarding trophies, right? Physical artifacts. It's one thing to sneak out and to murder people and then, you know, burn the clothes, wash your hands, come back and live your life as normal, hoping nobody finds out. But if you are in a suburban home with children and a wife, where do you put these things to ensure that they don't get found? Because if your wife or kids find a box full of murder trophies, it's going to raise some alarm bells. Do you think that was part of the thrill for him, was having this stuff hidden around the normalcy, that contrast maybe?
Hidden in plain sight.
Yeah, yeah.
He would have had a relationship, I imagine, with his wife. We'll touch on the wife later on. It takes a lot of strength to strangle someone. A lot.
Okay.
And Dennis, occasionally his hands would cramp up whilst he was strangling. Do you know how he alleviated that minor problem?
I do not.
He had a little exercise, a rubber ball, and he used to squeeze it all the time, day in, day out, in training. That's
awful.
It's terrible, but it's also a level of commitment, which is interesting, I find. So once he's taken all these photographs, has to dispose of the body. Because he's a local, he knows there's a culvert which has got water in it, and it's a known dumping ground. So he loads the victim into the back of her car.
Right.
He drives her to a location where, just for your FYI, the sun was coming up and he had a real problem. He started to panic. So he's still in the church. I mean, how he knew the sun was coming up. He may have looked at his watch. He may have gone up because this is happening in the basement, which still had windows.
Yeah, and there's
the basement
out.
Of the church. Yeah, but it's blacked out. Mm. But then he gets the body back in the car. The sun's coming up. He then has to dispose of her. He takes her to this particular zone dumping ground where there were animal carcasses. There were dead dogs in this ditch. He throws her body still wrapped up in the blankets, and he covers it with some just stuff that was there. And then he has to go back to the church because he has to take all the black plastic off the windows. And he said in his record of interview that he felt comfortable doing that. And he said if he had been questioned by anyone in the congregation, it would have not been a problem because he's got the key and he would have just said, look, I'm just doing a bit of cleaning, and no one would have thought the wiser. That did not happen. He just went back, was not disturbed, picked up all the plastic. Then the next day, he goes back to the house,
mm-hmm.
and he goes in and he takes some more souvenirs, and then he remembers that he'd left the cord which he'd used to bind her hands and feet.
Yeah.
Now, this is interesting. He knew that there had been quite a few murders in that area in that time that he'd committed this first crime after 8 years.
Okay.
And he thought to himself, because he knew that a number of the murders committed in that area, people had been bound with a white cord. And he didn't want those murders to be associated with him. He knew that he'd left footprints when he disposed of Marine. So he put different shoes on to create different treads. He goes back to the scene and he removes the cord from the body. And he said in his statement that she had already began to decompose and the smell was atrocious, which could have also come from the dead dogs that were very, very close by. What a terrible and gruesome find. Again, there are photographs of the crime scene, but I decided to look at the blurry ones. Let's just say that. He then goes home.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't go home. What he does, get ready for this, because it's on the weekend. Where do you think he goes back to?
Church.
No, the scout weekend.
Oh, my God.
He goes back the next day.
Sorry, the horror of what you've been talking about has obliterated any memory of what he was doing beforehand. Okay, yep. Okay.
So he goes back and he just slots right in. To everyone at the scout camp, he would have been at home all night with his wife, recovering from the headache.
Mm-hmm.
Reality being he'd been out all night. He then had to get back into his scout uniform. His wife, as far as she's concerned, he's been at the scout movement on the weekend. So neither she nor the Cubs and Scouts would have known that he was actually not at either of those places. He was in the home and then the church, committing and then dealing with, you know, all his fantasies.
Mm.
The nephew of or one of the relatives of Marine comes home several days later, goes into the house and finds that there's no bedding at all.
Mm.
And it becomes yet again another mystery. And the police have certainly got no idea, because the previous crimes, no one was ever caught for those. And at this stage, they didn't know that the BTK killer was back.
Oh,
so
God. And to think he was just hiding in plain sight is the most upsetting thing here. The fact that, you know, he was essentially hibernating and getting ready for this for so long. And then to emerge from the wilderness and do such a horrifying thing. Would you say this is the worst so far of his murders?
Yes.
Yeah, me too.
Yep. Me too. But I have a terrible feeling that it could get worse.
Okay. Well, we're going to get to that next episode of our look, a continuing look at the BTK killer, a serial killer I didn't actually even know about until Dad brought him to my attention. We hope you've been finding this an interesting delve into the mind of somebody who's truly, utterly ruinously twisted. But that's all the time we have for this week's episode of Loose Units, The Shadow Files. But fear not, we will be back at the end of the week with our usual episode of Loose Ends. There's so much stuff to catch up on. In a couple of weeks, Dad's heading to Thailand, I'm heading to America. We are going to be lining up some special episodes to run whilst we are overseas. And then after that, Dad's going to be doing episodes live from Thailand, which is exciting. So fear not. Loose Units is going to keep hitting your feeds twice a week, every week. If you haven't already done so, be a pal and head across to Apple Podcasts or Spotify and leave us a rating and a review. It is super quick, super easy, and super appreciated. Thank you, stay safe, and we will see you very, very soon for more Loose Units. Bye, everyone.
Cheerio.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.